Wow. That's Chris Davis. We'll be talking to her today. This is Dave Douglas speaking. You're listening to A Noise from the Deep, the Greenleaf Music Podcast. Thanks for listening. You can get all of our episodes wherever you got this episode. So whether it's the greenleafmusic.com website or iTunes, there's plenty more episodes. And I'm really excited to be talking about new music with Chris Davis today. Send me a message. I love getting your emails at podcast@greenleafmusic.com or accost me in a live situation. A lot of people have come up to me and said how much they enjoy the podcast, and that's great because we're recording it in a small room in isolation and we have no idea. So it's always good to hear from people who are checking it out. There's lots going on at the label as the year comes to a close. This episode you'll probably get right after the first of the year. And so I hope you had a good holiday and vacation and welcome back. So we were listening to a track called Massive Threads from the album Massive Threads by Chris Davis on Thirsty Ear from about 2013. And so you heard a section of the piece where there's actually overdubbed two pianos, and it was originally written for six pianos. So Chris is obviously somebody who seems to like the piano. Hi, Chris.
Yes, I like the piano.
Surprise, surprise.
Surprise.
So would you, I mean, it's solo playing. You do a lot of solo playing.
I do,
but
yeah.
This piece somehow is a expansion of the ideas of that, would you say?
I had the chance to write, you know, when you get six pianos in a room. And so this opportunity came up to write this piece for Bang on a Can. And so my, you know, attempt sort of in that first section was to... you know, almost make it like you're in a room and you're just hearing all these people talking and you can't really make out any sort of specific conversation in this turn, in this situation, melody or, you know, even specific rhythm or loops going on. It's just really like a sort of chattering going on.
And is your process that you conceive of that beforehand or is it a very improvisatory approach?
No, it's conceived beforehand, pretty much. So, you know, when I gave them the piece, I sort of had, you know, four or five different rhythms written out and then improvise in this style, you know, and then that would create the effect of this chattering going on.
Hmm.
So, yeah, a lot, you know, the piece is long. There's sort of three different sections to it, and each one is mapped out and... You know, when we performed it at Bang on a Can, I felt like it didn't really come out the way I wanted it to. And part of that was just the room. It was so reverberant.
What room was it performed
in? It was in that hall down by, what is that area called? Like over by the World Trade Center.
You mean the Winter
Chamber
Garden?
Street. Yeah, Winter Garden.
In the financial district.
Yeah. It's like a, you know, it's a very, shopping mall,
it's,
right?
It's a boomy room, yeah.
It's boomy.
Lots
so
of glass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So six pianos sort of chattering away, you know.
Wow.
I think it sort of lost its effect. So I, you know, I wanted another shot at it, so
but
I tried.
But you recorded it for Thirsty Ear.
I recorded it for Thirsty Ear.
And you played all the piano parts.
Yeah, and... you know, I felt like maybe six might be too much for this recording specifically. So, you know, tried it out with two and tried to capture that effect on this recording without all
seems
the reverb.
It's funny because that procedurally it reminds me of that Lenny Tristano stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Where you've heard that, obviously.
Yeah, sure. Like lineup.
And but this is so so different. I mean. So this chattering, Massive Threads sounds like something vaguely internet related of people shouting at each other. And so when you wrote it, are there different time signatures going on or how would you say you went after getting the effect?
Not really. It's sort of, you know, these rhythms are like one bar of a, they're all, everybody was supposed to play major seventh chords. So that was.
But are they vertically, rhythmically interlocking or are they independent?
No, it's just, you know, like cue, here we go.
Do this for this amount of time. And then
you're playing these sorts of, you know, sort of dotted eighth, 16th note rhythms in the style of this improvisation, which is something I do often where I give someone a direction and the kind of improvisation that I want to fit with the piece and the compositional approach. So that was this one.
That's cool. And probably as a performer, it must have been interesting to have to read your own instruction and sort of.
Yeah, maybe. Totally. And then hear the piece for the first time, you know, in that moment and trying to, you know, figure out what was going on with the sound and hear everybody's parts. And of course they're improvising. And so I want to hear what that is. It was a whirlwind.
Yeah. But when you're performing your own work as a pianist, I'm just curious, everyone's different about this, but do you separate yourself from the composer mind when you go to perform, or do you still feel like you're coming at it as a performer from the perspective of having written it? And conceived it.
I think the composer mind is still there. Often I'll set these sort of, for myself, for solo playing, sort of framework. And I know that that's what I'm going to use to create the improvisation. But of course I don't know like how long it is. I'm sort of feeling out the pacing in the moment. So I don't know, the composer and improviser thing, it's not really separate for me in a way. It's very interlaced and interlocked.
So I want to play this track. This is from the same album. It's called Sorcerer's Apprentice. And I'd imagine there's some of these same things going on for you, but let's listen to a bit and then we'll talk about it. Thank you. Sorcerer's Apprentice. So we were talking before this, we started recording this conversation, and we agreed to not decide whether we would say Ligeti or Ligeti. But you say that this is based on one of his compositions, an etude?
Yeah, his etude number 10. Mm-hmm. It sort of has this gamelan effect, and you know, his piece is played much faster, but it's really two notes, G and A, and then you're playing that with your right hand, and then the left hand comes over and plays another A. So it's like three notes, you know, in a row that just keep repeating, and then it starts to span out, adding things, changing the sort of rhythmic pattern. So it's interesting, like, technique, I guess. I just found it an interesting way of playing repeated notes and then also seeing how the harmony expanded in that piece. And it's a different effect because I use preparation to sort of realize that sense of rhythmic overlap. It comes out in different ways based on what the preparation is.
Is there preparation in his piece?
No, it's not prepared.
So you added, what's the preparation? What do you do? What do you do to the poor piano?
Well, there's some eraser and some...
Like a rubber eraser.
Yeah, like an end pencil eraser. I just cut little slashes in it and it fits in the strings.
It fits over
perfectly.
The string.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of in between. Mm. And some clothespins. I'll put those in. And maybe some screws, but I don't always use those because metal is not that great for the piano. But, you know, depends on the situation.
I imagine you've gotten in trouble from time to time.
I have.
From putting things in the piano.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. Wow.
But, you know, wood and erasers don't hurt the string, so.
Yeah. Do you use masking tape, too,
sometimes? I use gaffer's tape.
Gaffer's tape.
Although on this one I didn't. That was sort of something I discovered recently that I've been using more.
Gaffer's tape,
yeah. Yeah.
Wow. But you do a lot of preparation, I've seen, you know, as an improviser.
Yeah, although I don't feel so fluid with going in and out of the piano. Like, you know, Sylvie Courvoisier is so great at, you know, she seems to be very fluid with moving in and out and so quick with the preparations. I have I've tried, but it doesn't seem natural to me. So I sort of set them up and then try to work within what's there. And you know, that's actually like a big part of my concept when I'm improvising too, is just working with whatever happens. It's like a, you know, a drummer showing up playing on a kit and not knowing what he's going to have. And then, just dealing with the sounds. So this is the piece is the same sort of approach where I put these preparations in, but I didn't really know where I was putting them in the string.
On this piece, Sorcerer's Apprentice?
On this piece, yeah.
Wow.
So then I would, you know, come upon these sounds and then try to...
And that goes for the recording too? Again, a Thirsty Year record from 2013, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did you tell the record producer that you didn't know where the preparations were going to fall?
There's no producer on this one.
Well, yeah, that happens in the music we make, doesn't it? Wow, that's really interesting because it sounds to me like you made some real decisions. So it's more like you play with what you find as you go along.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been doing it. I just been on tour, so of course I found sort of zoned into some things that sounds that I liked, and also, you know, I knew where in the range of the piano I wanted to stay. So, you know, it wasn't like I was reaching way out, you know, to the high notes and surprising myself, whatever. But, you know, and also it just sounds different on every piano. It's like, and sometimes the strings over, like cross over in different places. And so it's hard to completely plan how the preparation will work.
This recording that you and I just made together, you did a lot of prepared piano. I mean, we talked about it a little bit before the session, and the music was very improvised, but in listening to the tapes that are be coming out throughout the year, it sounds really fluid, the preparations. You know, I'm listening along to a track, and then suddenly I hear some dampened strings mm-hmm. and what I would describe as, I guess maybe I wouldn't describe it. I was going to say, you know, clicking and clacking, and, but just oddball sounds
yeah,
that
sure.
really, on first glance, don't sound like a piano.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think in that situation, too, there were so many players and, you know, there was time to just let things breathe.
Blended in a really interesting way with the modular synthesizer
really.
Of Matt Mitchell and the guitar of Fred Frith.
Yep.
So that really was an effective place for that kind of preparation. I want to transition to a work with a mixed quintet that you did on a record called Capricorn Climber that you recorded for Clean Feed, I mm-hmm. guess, in 2012.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So we'll listen to a little bit of this piece, Pass the Magic Hat, and then you'll have to tell me about the title. But it's Matt Maneri, Ingrid Lobrock, Trevor Dunn, and Tom Rainey. That's great. Pass the Magic Hat is the name of the tune, and the album is Capricorn Climber on Clean Feed. Chris Davis, composer, band leader. Very different than being a solo pianist, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So what was the... You want to talk about that? I mean, there's so much going on, I almost don't know where to begin.
Yeah, there's two sections to that piece, and we just listened to the second section,
mm-hmm.
Which is a solo section for Matt Maneri, and it's a blues, which people often, you know, I'll say that, and then
love it. Like,
really? Wow, I don't hear that at all, which is a huge compliment for me because I was trying to avoid, you know, I wanted to keep the form and sort of the feeling of the blues, the overall arc of it.
Because you're coming from the church, right?
That's right.
Not really.
Well, maybe. I'm the born again church.
Well, people, I'm sure, will go back and listen to that again with that in mind.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a blues in B, and the idea was to write a form that sort of expand the form, so each bar, instead of being maybe like, you know, 4 beats long, is now like 9 beats long or 7 mm-hmm. beats long. Mm-hmm. And it's also has that 12/8 feel, so it's like 9 beats within 12/8. So it, you know, it's the idea is that it's stretched over this longer period. Mm-hmm. And the intervals are more, you know, so I was thinking like, how would Morton Feldman like write a blues, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was using these sort of minor ninths, major sevenths, half steps, to create this sort of interplay, between the harmonic and sort of rhythmic content. Hmm. And then on top of that, the direction was for everyone to leave out, you know, like 80% of their part, so that as we were moving along, we'd just hear little pieces of the form coming out, but it wasn't completely clear that this was like a written material. We were obviously playing over a form, but mm-hmm. it wasn't, I wanted to avoid the, you know, the vamp, like,
sure.
and just getting, and it, becoming stale.
Cyclical.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, people would play like a little piece of their line, but we don't actually hear the line mm-hmm. come out until towards the end of the form, on the second right. time through the form. And, you know, wow. that was great for Matt because he didn't know what was coming through in the form, like mm-hmm. what he had to interact with or not. And, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. you know, this direction was, this is a blues. So he sort of plays yeah. like it's a blues, but then there's all this space. And I love the way he plays on
I think
this.
That's a great instruction. Don't play 80% of your part. Well, then why did you do all the work if you don't? Wow, that's really, really, that's interesting. Is this an ongoing group? Such great personalities.
Yeah, it is. We usually have a few concerts throughout the year. We're playing in Iowa, the Iowa Jazz Festival, in July, and yeah, a couple times a year.
So do you call this Chris Davis Quintet?
I call it, I guess, yeah, Chris Davis's Capricorn Climber.
I see. Are you Capricorn?
I am.
Your sign? Oh, mm-hmm. interesting. So your birthday's coming up.
It is. Yep.
Okay. Well, we're not going to get into the signs of the zodiac right now, so we'll move on and hear another mixed ensemble piece that you did that I just love, and I love the orchestration. It's 4 bass clarinets, organ, piano, guitar, and drums. Who's playing on this? I didn't get that.
Oh yeah, it's Oscar Noriega and Andrew Bishop and Joachim Badenhorst mm-hmm. and Ben Goldberg.
Wow.
And
that's a dream team of bass clarinetists.
It really is. Summit. They're amazing and wonderful people. Mm-hmm. And Jim Black on drums and Gary Versace on organ.
Wow.
And my husband Nate Radley on guitar. And myself on piano.
And you're playing piano. So it's called Union Forever. And it's on a record called Infrasound that you made for Clean Feed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's pretty, like, 2015.
2015.
Great. Union Forever, Chris Davis. Got anything you want to say about that?
I originally wrote this piece for my trio, or collective trio with Ingrid and Ingrid Labrock and Tyshawn Sorey. So mm-hmm. there's another version of it on the album Union, which is the tune. And then when I wrote it for the bass clarinets, decided to call it Union Forever.
Sounds good.
I wrote a whole new tune. It's got two names.
Yeah. So. Well, rearrangements are, yeah, often recompositions, mm-hmm. aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, you reimagined the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. And the section we listened to is through composed. I don't usually work with systems in a way, but this was sort of like, specific intervallic ideas. But this started out with five notes that, you know, I was sort of... struggling to figure out, you know, what material I was going to use to write the piece. So it started out with these five notes, and so it's in a five group, five bar phrase, and there's sort of this kind of ping pong back and forth, and in each of the five bars, the material comes together sort of on these triplets, and as we move along, things are added, and then there's some tempo shifts that sort of speed up, so it just feels like we're falling towards this sort of moment of unison, and then it breaks away, and we get a whole new, it's almost like two pieces within within the composition.
You can really hear that. That's great. And is this a band that you call Infrasound, or?
Yeah, another one where
are you available
title...
for weddings and bar mitzvahs?
Of course.
It must be hard to get all those clarinet players together in the same room.
It's really hard.
I mean,
really
not because of animosity, but more just everybody lives in
Andrew's
different
places. In Detroit, and Joachim's in Spain now, and everybody. But the amazing thing is, like, we played Winter Jazz Fest last year, or maybe 2 years ago, and they all came, you know. They made it work.
Ben Goldberg lives in the Bay Area, right?
Yeah. So they're just, I mean, it's so like moving, you know, just to see the dedication and, you know, like love for the music and for the community and for me.
But also dedication to that instrument, which is a very particular and difficult.
Yeah, and carrying that thing around. I mean, Andrew had to rent one from University of Michigan, like the Contra bass, you know. It's this huge thing. And like they really brought it. So I'm very fortunate.
And Clean Feed supported you documenting this.
Clean Feed did it. This was a project for the Shifting Foundation. They asked me to write, you know, a grant proposal for something that I might not be able to otherwise do. And of course, like writing for a bigger project is expensive. And so this was for that. And then Clean Feed released it.
And you made a number of records for Clean Feed. And they're a Portuguese label, right?
Yes. Yep.
And they've done so many great.
They have.
They've supported so many artists.
Really, yep. Yep. They're so supportive. Pedro Costa is a wonderful person, and he loves the music, and, you know, it's just an opportunity for so many artists to get their music out there. So I don't know where we'd be without him and Clean Feed.
Are you still working with Clean Feed?
Yeah, I am. Although I'm, you know, I recently set up my own label, in an effort to try and see if, you know, I'm never sure like how many albums I really sell, and, you know, it's always kind of vague. And so I just wanted a clearer sense of that.
So I definitely want to talk to you about starting your own label. It's something that, I know a little about, and I'm always curious to hear why and how people do it. But first I want to play something from this record, Waiting for You to Grow, which was another Clean Feed production from 2013. It's a trio with Tom Rainey and John Hebert, and the composition is called Twice Escaped. Thank you. talking about waiting for you to grow. Was that about becoming a mother, maybe? Or
yeah, I was commissioned to write some music for the jazz gallery, mm-hmm. and I wanted to write some music for the trio. We were also going on tour, and mm-hmm. I was like 7 months pregnant at the time, so wow. It seemed like a good, you know, it was like writing and, you know, having like feeling hiccups going on, and, you know, that's one of the tune titles. It's just, you know, it's sort of takes over your life, and it's
good
really
stuff to write about, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Compositional.
Yeah, it's very cool. So in the album, there's like a little picture of Benji when he's 3 months, and yeah, very like personal record for me.
Yeah, I'd say so. And he's now three, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yep.
Oh, that's wonderful. And the piece is called Twice Escaped.
Yeah, this one, this is actually a really old tune. I wrote it in 2005, mm-hmm. and it's on a quartet record with Tony Malaby and Jeff Davis and Ivan Opsvik. And I just, you know, I wanted sort of a form to play around with, and I've always sort of liked this tune. There's a lot in it, even though it's, I think it's like a 7-bar tune. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seemed like a good time to try it with the trio.
Do you feel like it's something where, would you think of it in terms of being more connected to quote unquote the jazz tradition than some of the other music that you write? Or
yeah,
make?
Totally. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Because it's always interesting to me with improvised music and playing on themes and talking about what jazz is or isn't, and is it even a word we should use, and then so many musicians these days, it seems like we go in and out of various explicit connections to the traditions of jazz, and
right, that's true,
and our heroes, and
yeah,
would you link that to any number of, well, maybe not even necessarily pianists, but artists that have been important to you?
Well, I was just before I came here, I'm writing an article for Zorn's Arcana paper.
Great.
And I was just writing about this, but you know, Paul Bley has been like mm-hmm. a huge influence, and you know, in some ways I think that this sort of comes out of that sort of wow. love for that music. Feeling free, you know, over a form, that it doesn't have to stay within the harmonic material that's there, mm-hmm. that you can follow an idea and let it, let that be the thread that, mm-hmm. you know, you build your improvisation with. And, you know, and then on top of this, just playing with Tom and John, who are such mm-hmm. good listeners, who, if I go somewhere, you know, they'll know where sure. I am in the form, or if I want them to be harmonically connected to me outside of the form, or if I want them to be more rooted in the piece. So part of that is just, you know, feeling trusting enough with right. the people that I play with.
Well, they
to
have deep roots in playing
exactly.
standards and
exactly.
tunes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Paul Bley, that's interesting. I do think that it's, you know, one of the exciting things about music now is that there is that freedom to come and go with forms
mm-hmm.
and not always maintain a strict relationship to a cyclical form,
right.
and yet still refer to either classic AABA type tunes or the blues or other kinds of forms where musicians seem to be reimagining what the relationships are to
right.
those things.
Yeah, exactly.
And everyone does it in a personal way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, you know, one of the things that I heard in this piece that I thought was really interesting.
Yeah.
So you started your own record label. Congratulations and condolences.
You look thrilled.
It's special. But you opened your label, which is called Pyroclastic, with a great, and I'm sure what will be award-winning recording duo with Craig Taborn. So why did, I mean, I guess I don't have to ask why you started the label, but what was the impetus at this time? And is there any reason that this duo project was the thing that instigated starting it?
Well, I'd sent it to some labels, and you know, there was always the stipulation of like owning some of the music, and you know, this was another project that was funded by the Shifting Foundation, and it felt like, you know, it's sort of, you know, it's paid for in a way, so giving it away to someone to make money off of it, it seemed like sort of unnecessary. And at the same time, as much as I love Clean Feed and Pedro and Thirsty Ear, the labels that I've worked with, you know, I just don't, and it's also my fault too. I don't you know, keep track of how many records I sold and the business side of things. So I was curious to just, you know, try to take this on. And of course I have some help with running the label and mm-hmm. managing it all, but yeah, it's sort of an experiment to see also like who buys the records. And, you know, through Bandcamp, you get emails, you sort of see who's buying them.
Are there CDs?
There are CDs. Yeah. There's a CD and a DVD and a package. Great. So.
And they go to pyroclasticrecords.com to find out more, or where do you want to send them?
My website, chrisdavis.net.
Chrisdavis.net.
Yeah.
And Chris with a K. K-R-I-S-D-A-V-I-S.
There's links to Bandcamp and, you know, Amazon. But I don't know how you have found it, but Bandcamp has been really the best thing.
Yeah, we like Bandcamp.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a good service. And I also think, you know, people who've come to my shows know that I am really adamant about making the CDs available at concerts.
Yeah.
And it was one of the things when I was on a major label mm-hmm. for all those years, one of the most frustrating aspects was that they would never show up at a concert.
Yeah.
So I said, when I start my own label, I'm going to make sure there's CD, you know, and sometimes it's not easy.
Right.
But at least, you know, if it doesn't happen, now it's my fault. Mm-hmm. I can't blame anyone else. but I also think that like you said, knowing the people that are interacting with your music, that's been a big thing for me and mm-hmm. for us as a label. You know, getting messages from people and being in touch with people and, you know, being able to present the music the way that you want to. But I also think that in this age, I mean, it's not just the internet, but in this age where I feel like we all have to be more proactive about living the lives that we want to live,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, especially in the political environment we're finding ourselves in, you know, self-determination has become really important
mm-hmm.
in a way that was presaged by artists like Charles Mingus or Charles Tolliver or Stanley Cowell or mm-hmm. you know, people that Tim Byrne,
right.
John Zorn,
right.
Greg Osby, people that have started their own labels over mm-hmm. the years. Branford Marcellus has a label. And I think maybe even label is the wrong word. I think more it's just like take the bull by the horns and
yeah, exactly.
do what you need to do. And this project, Duopoly, with Craig Taborn, I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that you shopped it around and got, you know, whatever, pushback or conditions and mm-hmm. say you put it out yourself. So we'll hear a little bit of this piece that's called Foxfire. Thank you. Chris Davis and Craig Taborn. I could say something really stupid. Well, I'm not even going to say it. What I was thinking was I would make a joke and say, well, how much of that is improvised? But but I feel like it's obvious that there's some organization going on and you guys are interacting with it in a really sophisticated and intelligent and graceful and beautiful way.
Mm-hmm. We didn't, you know, there was no rehearsal. We sort of came in and that was the concept of the project. Mm-hmm. So the piece has, was through composed piece of sort of these, interacting rhythmic layers and certain sort of pitches, and it didn't happen like that at all, you know. We were like, and we didn't talk about it just sort of happened that we played in the vibe of the piece, and mm-hmm. It's realized at the end, like a little bit, you hear a little bit of the written stuff, but maybe 10%. It's pretty wow. open. And we just finished a tour. We played for 2 weeks and mm-hmm. Played a bunch of new music, and it was sort of a similar experience where we wrote compositions, but it's free to go in and out of things, to play things, to not play things, just to really be in the moment, but have the option to grab.
What Otto Leo Smith said to me, he said, just because you put a piece of music in front of me doesn't mean I'm going to play it.
Right.
I said, okay.
Exactly.
Wow. So it's, that must be amazing. Are there more shows coming up? Are you playing at Winter Jazz Fest?
No, I'm playing with Duopoly. This project is with 8 different duos. Oh. So for Winterfest, I'm playing with Tim Byrne and Angelica Sanchez.
Great.
And Billy Drummond. So we're playing duos with each of those people.
What night is that? Is it all in one at one time, or is it 3 separate shows?
It's all at one time, so it's each set is 15 or 20 minutes, and it's on the 7th at 7, I think, for Winterfest.
7th at 7. Yeah,
I don't know. I can't remember.
You don't know what space it's at. Well, no. People can find that out. I'll also be playing. I'm playing on the 6th.
Who are you playing with?
With my band High Risk, with Shigeto and Jonathan Marin and Mark Giuliana on drums.
Oh, great. Okay, cool.
And lots of artists, both Greenleaf and non-Greenleaf and pyroclastic and non-pyroclastic, will be playing at Winter Jazz Fest. So that's my plug. So it was great hearing all this music and talking to you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great.
And you're now relatively a neighbor of mine in the state of the great state of New York.
I am. Yeah.
So I hope we'll be getting to do some more playing. And this piece that's just coming out of mine, I'm really thrilled that you were able to play on it.
Hopefully you can come over for Sunday pasta dinner.
Ooh, count me in.
Okay, good.
All right, we'll finish that conversation off air. And I'll just say thank you. And we will go out listening to this arrangement that you wrote for a tentet for Tony Malaby's band on a record called Novella on Clean Feed. And it's super fun. Thanks. Great.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here.